Lesson number 8, Building in Faith. In this lesson, we shall consider Nehemiah's successful methods of meeting those who are under the influence of Satan, and he would hinder the cause of God. Nehemiah knew exactly what he wanted to do. Motivated by his enthusiasm, the people of Judah caught his vision of a restored Jerusalem, and by his faith, they saw that the city might become. Then by faith, exercising their own faith, they sustained their courage through the difficult weeks ahead. As we study this lesson, we each should ask ourselves, what vision does the faith of Jesus help me to see for the present and the future? Nehemiah was a type of Christ. The remnant church functioned by the faith of Jesus. He gives it to them as a gift. Part number 1, Builders of the Wall. Archaeologists have guesstimated that the walls which were to be rebuilt around Jerusalem were from 2 to 3 miles in length, many feet thick and many feet tall. This would take considerable teamwork, brute work, to construct huge stones, in between them the necessary smaller rubble were to be built up into an impregnable wall. We sometimes wonder at the almost monotonous repetition of personal names in the book of Nehemiah. I'm sure as we've been reading through the Bible, we may have started them, stumbled over a few, and then given them up. There are pages in the book of Nehemiah that are just lists of names. But these names should encourage us with the realization that in God's records, no one is overlooked, no task considered too small for him to notice. Every class of person worked side by side with Nehemiah, merchants, craftsmen, family units, even their children, temple servants, all joined with the leaders in combining their effort. Every kind of talent was put to the task in hand, and each group tackled its specific work, its specific segment, the task nearest to its hand. The high priest set the pace by his example. Paul called him the ruler of our people. And the nobles, Nehemiah noticed, put their necks to the work. No task was beneath the leaders. Tasks of clearing away the rubble, building the wall, were not despised by them. In every religious movement, Ellen White notes, there are some who, while they cannot deny that the cause is God's, still hold themselves aloof. It is well for such ones to remember the records kept on high, that book in which every neglected opportunity to do service for God is recorded, and there too every deed of faith and love is held in everlasting remembrance. We want our names recorded in the books of God. We need them recorded in the books of God to survive. Those who are in the book of life, the only ones who will be considered in the investigative judgment. God writes them as Nehemiah wrote them because of what they did for him. Don't let anyone despise works. Jesus told those on his right hand, "Inasmuch as ye have done it to one of the least of these, you have done it to me." We've got to do. God gives us faith, God gives us grace and power and blessings and gifts and talents, and we must exercise them. Then as the troubles rose, enemies threatened what they were doing. They faced danger. And Nehemiah suggested that with one hand they should work, and with the other they should hold their weapons of defense. What a picture! Nobody was allowing anything to discourage him. And right in the forefront, moving between them, was Nehemiah. They only removed their clothes, he records, so as to wash them. This is a picture of dedication and determination and drive. No wonder the wall was completed. Part number two, facing contempt and ridicule. But the enemies of the Jews were not idle. Sanballat was the governor of Samaria. The Samaritans, we have noted, were descendants of the Jews who had been left behind in captivity of Babylonian by Nebuchadnezzar, and the people who had been brought in from different countries. They were a mixed multitude, half-breed, half-heathen, half-Hebrew. Another enemy leader was Tobiah. He was an Ammonite. You remember, Ammon was one of the sons of Lot by one of his daughters. The Ammonites were always enemies of Israel for well over 1,000 years. Geshem was the leader of Kedah in Arabia. He controlled Moab and Edom. Moab was a brother of Ammon, an incestuous son of Lot, and Edom was Esau. And this Ammon, Moab, and Esau were the most constant, implacable enemies of Israel. We see that same kind of animosity and ferocity against Israel today from the nations around them. Some of these enemies had official authority to interfere. Or did they? Of course not. They pretended they did. They pretended to have the authority from the Persian king. But Nehemiah had come armed with documents. So their bluff was called. But they did not give up. Nor having no authority, they then indulged in ridicule and mockery and sarcasm. They made every attempt verbally to discourage the workers. Now we should form a little picture of what was happening. All this part of Jerusalem was rubble and broken down. Some of it had been repaired. Ezra had done something. The walls had crumbled. There were no homes for these people. You remember the first chapter of Haggai? The people went to build their own houses. They had somewhere to live. They said, how can we work if we have no places to keep our families? And so these men that we have thought about mingled with them, laughed at them, ridiculed, jested against them, disparaged everything they did. Their rudeness might have roused a lesser leader, distracted his attention from rebuilding the walls into retaliating against his enemies in some way. But Nehemiah's prayer life kept him firmly at his task. He reviewed and reviewed again what the Lord had done for him, and he was convinced that he was doing what God wanted him to do with the authority that God had given him at the time God wanted it done. When facing the worst of conditions, Nehemiah's habit was to dart a short prayer to God for help. When the leader showed courage, the rest of the workers took heart and kept at their task. Part number three, thwarting threats of invasion. Beginning as a war of words, the conflict between these enemies and Nehemiah and God's people intensified into a war of nerves. When remnants of the Philistine nation joined the other parties, Ammon, Moab, and Edom, and the Samaritans, they had completely surrounded Jerusalem. Samaritans were to the north, Ammonites, Moabites to the east, Arabians and the Edomites to the south, and the Philistines to the west. If you've got a picture of Jerusalem, you can see the enemies all around them in your mind. And you can transfer over now 2,500 years and see similar enemies around Jerusalem, ready to destroy Israel any moment. Then they spread rumors that they were about to attack Jerusalem. Whether they actually planned to do so or not, no one could be certain. But the Jews were apprehensive, and the work of building was stopped while the people armed themselves as best they could. Nehemiah continued to maintain a strong prayer life, encouraged his people to do the same, assuring them that the work was of God and that he would take care of them. Nevertheless, the Jews felt that they had a part to play in defending themselves as best they could. Their enemies discovered that every working group on the walls was armed and on the lookout. And so, their element of surprise was gone. But Nehemiah continued working until the wall had been completed, and only then were they able to feel a measure of security. The lesson we learn from this experience is that while trust in God's protection is maintained, man has a part to play. He must do what he can. As he does his duty within the divine will as he sees it, his discouragement will diminish, and he will give opportunity for God's power to work through him. Part number 4, high-level accusations of treason. Realizing that Nehemiah was the driving force behind the success of the Jews, the surrounding enemies sought to sabotage his efforts and to accuse him personally of treason against Persia. They also tried all kinds of dirty tricks. The first was an invitation by Sanballat to a conference of governors at the village called Ono, about 27 miles from Jerusalem. Nehemiah immediately replied that he had no time for such a trip. He might well have suspected that this would make him vulnerable and open him to kidnapping or assassination, or at least, as he says, some acts of mischief. When I was a little boy and my father would read me this story, he was a great punster. And he told us that if anyone asks us to do anything that was wrong, we should follow Nehemiah and say, "Oh no." Oh no is the response in every temptation. That was long before someone suggested that we ought to say, just say no. Geshem then spread a rumor that Nehemiah was building the defenses of Jerusalem to establish himself as king. Sanballat fanned this gossip with the suggestion that Artaxerxes would soon hear this and what his cupbearer was up to and take steps accordingly. Bribed by Tobiah and Sanballat, Shemaiah, who was a quisling Israelite, who had helped Nehemiah build the walls, shut himself up alone to distract Nehemiah. He then suggested that he and Nehemiah meet in a chamber in the temple to discuss what was taking place. He even suggested that he might help Nehemiah to protect himself from assassination. Nehemiah sensed that something was amiss and declined his suggestion. Had he shown the slightest fear, the people would have become discouraged and the cause jeopardized. Part number 5, divided loyalties. Nehemiah and his builders completed the 3 miles of the wall in some 52 days. This brought to completion the project commenced by Ezra years before and delayed for so long. Realizing that the Jews had accomplished, in spite of all their harassment, the surrounding enemies were much cast down, humiliated because of their futility. They were ready to acknowledge that it had been God's power which had accomplished all this. Today, the advocates of unpopular truth must expect opposition from its open enemies. This is often fierce and cruel, but it is far less dangerous than the secret enmity of those who profess to be serving God, as Shemaiah had done, while at heart they are servants of Satan. While apparently uniting in the work of God, many are connected with his foes, and if in any way crossed in their plans or approved for their sins, they court the favor of the enemies of truth and open to them the plans of God's servants and the working of his cause. Today, sometimes, some of these men will go to the newspaper, religious editors of various newspapers, and spill all kinds of warped and twisted and lying statements about the cause of God and his leaders. These men of two minds, Ellen White says, and two purposes, pretend to serve God. They go over to the enemy and serve him as best suits their inclination. While backed by prophecy and grace, guarded by unseen hosts of angels, Nehemiah and his friends were required to exercise faith, which showed itself in work of heroic proportions. Bring faith into your experience, Spirit of Prophecy says. Faith lightens every burden, relieves every weariness. Providences that are now mysterious will be solved if we trust in God. Walk by faith in the path he marks out. Trials will come, but go ahead. This will strengthen your faith, fit you for service. The records of sacred history are written not merely that we may rest and read and wonder, but that the same faith which wrought in God's servants of old may work in us. In no less marked manner will the Lord work now wherever there are hearts of faith to be channels of his power.